Title of this novel is Reinforcements. Acknowledgements. I wish to thank my wife Valerie for her continued support in the creation of this book. My friend Tom Taylor, who laughed with me during and after the creation of this story. And Gary John Milo, who motivated me and helped to build my confidence so that I could do this. Disclaimer. This is a work of fiction. Names, characters, and businesses, places, events, and incidents are either the products of the author's imagination or used in a fictitious manner. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Reinforcements, Chapter 1. When Professor Warren Lashley, a skinny guy with tinted glasses and lamb-chop beard that sprouted from the sides of his face, saw 10 more faces in his classroom than he first expected, he dropped 25 copies of syllabi on the front desk and in haste drawled, "There are two kinds of people in the world, poets and shitheads. I'm a poet and you are shitheads." Then he left. Among the group, left dumbfounded, Ron Tuck sat, sure that something remarkable would happen next. Instead, students rose, approached the desk, and each took one copy of the syllabus. Ron did the same and left. A little while later, at the corner streetlight, bouncing to the Beach Boys' Fun, 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 Ron's 59 Catalina cruiser suffered a series of frame-shaking convulsions. Metal ground upon metal. The sound pierced Ron's ears, and he brought his arms up to block out the noise. He stepped out, lifted the hood. There, among clouds of smoke and steam, a ruptured hose sprang out and danced like a snake. Ron tried to settle and think. Maybe he could get it across the street if he could just start it up once more. Driver's side door open, he leaned in and turned the key. The Catalina moaned. Next, he strained against the open door and pushed. He saw the car wouldn't give. Determined he move it, he shoved harder. Ah! He exploded in a frustrated scream before collapsing in the driver's seat. Only then did he notice the gear shift fixed in park. He stared down at the small pile of trash in the corner of the floor mat, where a matchbook cover, a penny, and some sand lay. He wished he could shrink down into it. Time passed. He looked up from the car. The traffic light glowed red. "This really sucks," he snarled, wanting to bang his fists into something. Rather, he flipped the gear shift into neutral and waited for the light to change while steady trickles of oil and water seeped from the Catalina. "Cocksucker," he hissed. The light changed to green, and Ron heard the football coach's voice in his head. "Drive, drive, move those feet. Short, choppy steps. Drive, babies, drive." The car lurched into the center of the street. Horns blared in complaint. He threw the gear shift back into park. The horns blew louder. He ignored them and focused on his breathing. A suit with black-rimmed glasses appeared outside the open door. "Let's try it again," he said, as if the team was running a fresh play. They pushed. The car arced across the street's midline point and coasted into the fringes of the gas station. Ron turned and yelled thanks back to the suited man, who didn't turn around. Later, Ron now stood by the car's raised hood, waiting for the Catalina's would-be savior, clad in a black-stained leather apron, to come up from under it. He did, expression reflecting a shit smell. He paused at the sight of the car dripping oil and water. "You got big problems," he said. "You can't fix it before you close, huh?" says Ron. The owner laughed. "You probably need a new fucking engine, kid. Nobody's going to drop that into this pile of shit. He started to walk away and turned back to Ron and added, I got no place for that wreck here. Dumbfounded and shocked, Ron made arrangements to have it towed. The gas station owner saw the car's decent tires and battery. He agreed to take the carcass off of Ron's hands for what it would have cost to get it to the yard. The walk home wasn't long, but Ron was dazed. The man was right. He had big problems. How was he supposed to get to school on Monday, or go anywhere that night? Instant immobilization. First, he thought he would have to borrow a car to get back to the gas station. Then he'd have to beg. He tried to phrase his explanations to his parents. Just that morning, his mother said that she was ready to scream because she needed $400 worth of dental work and had no idea where she was going to get the money. She'd scream for sure about his damaged car and his request for money to fix it. At home, Ron stormed a path from his room, the bathroom, the kitchen, and back again, shouting out the story of what had happened, all the while his mother hollered for him to stop. Don't you understand? He griped. I now have no way to get anywhere. Well, she retorted, you just have to get another car. With what? At first, Marjorie Bombasco seemed surprised by her son's question. Suddenly, her expression turned resolute as Ron slammed back into the room. I don't know, but I don't think I can help you. I'm not going to walk around with rotten teeth so that you can have a car. Do you think George has any money? George? His mother exclaimed in mocking disbelief. You don't even talk to him. And now you want to ask him to buy you a car? I don't know. Ron grumbled, shoulders slumping. It was macaroni night. They had pasta for dinner 3 times a week. Sometimes it wasn't bad, but in warm weather, the idea turned his stomach. The meal left him bloated and burping, and it always ended up being stuck to him. Elbows and forearms were particularly vulnerable. Besides, he wasn't Italian. He had never been Italian. He'd eat what they were having and keep his mouth shut. This wasn't the best night to complain. Steam whooshed back into Marjorie's face as she poured the boiled pasta into the colander. The steam continued up the wall and outlined an old water stain. She grunted, sweating. She looked at her son. Do you think you could do something to help me? What? You could set the table and put out 3 glasses, 3 knives, 3 forks, and 3 macaroni dishes. He wanted to scream. But Ron did as she asked and set the table, finishing up just as George Bombasco, his stepfather, came in from work. Hello, he grumbled, then looked to his wife. How do you feel? Well, Marjorie started, striking a pose. At the moment, the sweat's pouring off me, and from the way Ron's acting, I don't know if I'm going to be allowed to eat this friggin' dinner, or whether I'll end up puking it all over the floor. Without response, George moved to the bathroom. What's wrong? He asked as he closed the door and turned on the water. At dinner, Ron tried to recap what had happened to him, but was interrupted by his mother. Why do I have to listen to this shit over dinner? She harped. My ulcer is now good and fricked up, and I can't eat anything. But neither of you give a damn. Ron and George ate in silence, and she stared angrily at her plate. Moments ticked by before she picked it up and carried it to the sink. She returned to the table, her cigarettes in hand. Well, Marjorie began, addressing Ron. What are you going to do? I don't know, said Ron. Do you think we can afford to help him, George? George froze, the fork 2 inches from his mouth. We haven't got it, he said, and continued eating. Maybe I'll ask my father if he can loan me the money, Ron suggested. His mother nodded in agreement. Yeah, why don't you ask your father for a change? Ron turned back to George. Can I borrow your car so I can get my things out of the Catalina? George froze again. I might have to go out for a little while. I'll only need it for about 20 minutes. Silence followed. Can I use it or not? Ron spoke up. You know, his stepfather started, I've been asking you for 2 weeks to get the cover on the swimming pool. I asked you in a nice way, and you treat me like shit. You make believe you don't hear me, and then you ignore me. But when you want something, you ask for it like you deserve to get it. Feeling helpless, Ron pushed his chair back from the table, went to the phone, and dialed among his mother's grumblings of, why can't we ever discuss anything like normal people? Why do we treat each other like we're animals? The phone rang only a few minutes before his father's voice came through, happy and strong. Hi, Dad, Ron greeted. Are you going to be around tonight? You are? Yeah? Okay, then. I'll see you later. He hung up, sauntered back to the table, and dressed George again. When you're sure about whether or not you're going to be able to loan me your car, can you let me know? I want to go over to my father's house and see if he can give me the money to get some transportation. Why can't he come over here? Said Marjorie. I've already told him that I'd go over there. Well, call him back. No, I'll walk over there, and maybe I'll have to wait to get my belongings out of the car, and maybe they'll get stolen, but that's just the breaks, I guess, huh? George finished, threw down his fork. It hit the plate with a clang. Take the car, he forced out. I'm just a piece of shit around here anyway, so take the car. He lit a cigarette, dropped his lighter, picked up his newspaper, and headed toward the living room. Nice meal, said Marjorie. The night cooled around 11 as Ron and Hank rode the loop in Hank's VW. Hank, I want to get so fucked up tonight that I don't know anything. After a while, you just don't get any higher, said Hank. That's not true, man, Ron countered. We just haven't smoked enough dope yet. A Dylan song on the radio. They both laughed at the Ah Mama part. Ron shook his head apprehensively. Fucking Dylan. He knows. He knows. He knows where the shit is, and he tells you how you're going to get hit with it. He knows that if you don't keep your eyes open, there won't be any difference between the shit and you. Even Dylan's full of crap, said Hank. Nah, but he's sure telling us that we are. The trouble is that knowing that doesn't help. The Beatles help, said Hank. They both laughed again. That's my point, said Ron. They say if you stay fucked up enough of the time, you won't notice it's shit, and therefore it won't really be shit for you. Yeah, Hank said, but when you're that fucked up, everybody dumps on you anyway. Do you think Mick knows it's all shit, man? Ron asked. Mick is one of the big shot dumpers, said Hank, gliding into his Reginald Van Gleason voice. He just dumps with style, though, you know. But sometimes, Ron went on, I think he's really cool. Sometimes, I think I'm a jerk-off for thinking he's really cool. The two sat in silence for what seemed like a long time before Ron said, let's light the last joint. I don't think I can smoke anymore, Hank said. Come on, man, Ron protested. I spent half the day with a piston shoved up my ass and the other half begging somebody to take it out. Giving in, Hank lit the joint as his friend talked. "It's right down past my old man's house. You know, I just walked over there and explained things to him, and he said that it would be okay. Said that he'd see what he could do about getting me some transportation. He can't get me much more than transportation, but what else do you need?"